Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Susan Berfield's The Hour of Fate is a work of narrative nonfiction that examines a decisive moment in early 20th century American history, when Theodore Roosevelt and J.P. Morgan collided over the future of capitalism, corporate power, and public authority. Centered on the Northern Securities antitrust battle and the 1902 anthracite coal strike, the book shows how a new kind of federal intervention emerged out of conflict between big business, labor unrest, and a more assertive presidency. Berfield uses these events to explain how progressive-era reforms began to take shape, including ideas about accountability, regulation, and the government's role in balancing private wealth with public interest. The book is both a historical account and a political argument about why this period matters beyond its own time, especially for readers interested in inequality, plutocracy, labor rights, and the limits of concentrated economic power. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, Roosevelt and Morgan as opposing models of American capitalism. A central strength of the book is the way it frames Theodore Roosevelt and J.P. Morgan as men who came from similar elite backgrounds, but arrived at sharply different conclusions about power. Berfield does not treat them as simple hero and villain figures. Instead, she presents them as embodiments of two competing visions of national development. Morgan represents concentrated private control, financial order, and the assumption that a small circle of powerful men should guide the economy from above. Roosevelt represents a more public-facing version of capitalism, one that could tolerate wealth and large enterprise only if they remained answerable to democratic oversight. This contrast gives the book its core logic. The conflict between them is not merely personal, but structural. It reflects a country deciding whether industrial capitalism would be governed primarily by corporations or by the state acting in the public interest. That framing makes the biography of each man more useful than a standard dual portrait, because it turns their lives into an argument about economic legitimacy and political authority. Secondly, Northern Securities as a test case for federal antitrust power. The Northern Securities case is one of the book's most important historical mechanisms because it demonstrates how the federal government began asserting jurisdiction over large trusts operating across state lines. Berfield shows why this railroad merger mattered beyond the immediate fate of one company. Railroads were the nervous system of the national economy, and Morgan's attempt to consolidate control through Northern Securities symbolized the reach of finance capital in the Gilded Age. Roosevelt's decision to authorize legal action against the trust marked a turning point in how the presidency could challenge corporate concentration. The case matters in the book not only because it ended in a breakup, but because it clarified a broader principle: private enterprise could not place itself beyond public regulation simply by expanding across jurisdictions. Berfield uses the case to explain why antitrust law became a defining tool of progressive-era reform, and why the struggle over market power was also a struggle over who had the right to define economic fairness in a national economy. Thirdly, the coal strike shows how labor unrest forced the government to act. Berfield broadens the story beyond elite finance by making the 1902 anthracite coal strike a second major axis of the book. The strike threatened not just mining companies, but households that depended on coal for heat, which turned a labor conflict into a national emergency. This episode reveals how vulnerable industrial society had become to disruptions in production and transport, and why the federal government could no longer remain distant from labor relations. Roosevelt's intervention is significant because it was one of the first major instances in which the national state stepped into a labor dispute to help resolve it rather than simply suppress it. The book uses this crisis to show that progressive reform was not driven only by abstract moral concern. It emerged from concrete pressure created by dangerous working conditions, low wages, and the strategic importance of key industries. In that sense, the strike helps explain the origins of later reforms such as workers' compensation and the 8-hour workday, which Berfield presents as part of a wider rebalancing of power between labor and capital. Fourthly, Berfield connects Gilded Age excess to the emergence of progressive-era reform. Another major dimension of the book is its wider reconstruction of the social and political environment in which Roosevelt and Morgan operated. Berfield places their clash against a backdrop of soaring immigration, labor unrest, weak public oversight, and the seemingly unchecked expansion of big business. This broader setting matters because it shows that the struggle was not an isolated confrontation between exceptional individuals. It was a response to a system under strain. The Gilded Age world that Berfield describes produced immense wealth, but also instability, dangerous work, and public suspicion that economic power had outrun democratic control. By weaving labor, finance, and government into one account, she demonstrates that reform was not a single event, but a process shaped by conflict across multiple social classes. The result is a history of transition, from a period when corporate power often operated with little accountability to one in which the federal government began to claim a stronger role in protecting the public and defining the boundaries of fair competition. Lastly, a history book written to illuminate current debates about wealth and democracy. The book is distinctive because it is not only interested in what happened in 1901 and 1902, but also in why those events still resonate. Burfield explicitly draws parallels between the early progressive era and present-day debates over inequality, plutocracy, and the political influence of capital. That makes the book valuable for readers who want historical context for modern arguments about antitrust policy, labor rights, and the responsibilities of wealth in a democracy. At the same time, the book avoids reducing history to simple analogy. Its real contribution is showing that conflicts over regulation, corporate concentration, and public accountability have deep roots in American political development. Readers can use the book to understand how institutions such as the presidency and the federal courts became central to managing industrial power, and why questions about who should control the economy remain unresolved. This contemporary relevance is one reason the book stands out in its category. It combines archival reporting with a clear explanation of how early 20th century power struggles still shape political language today. In conclusion, The Hour of Fate is best suited for readers of American history, business history, political biography, and anyone trying to understand the origins of modern debates over corporate power. It will appeal especially to readers interested in Theodore Roosevelt, the Progressive Era, antitrust law, labor conflict, and the history of capitalism in the United States. Its practical value lies in the way it explains how federal authority expanded in response to railroad consolidation and labor unrest, while its intellectual value comes from showing how public accountability became a central question in American economic life. What distinguishes this book from many similar works is Burfield's decision to treat Roosevelt and Morgan together rather than separately. That choice turns a familiar historical period into a tightly focused study of competing philosophies of power. The book is also notable for linking high finance, labor politics, and reform politics in one coherent narrative, which gives readers a fuller picture than a conventional presidential biography or corporate history would provide. For readers who want history that is both rigorously reported and relevant to current arguments about inequality and democracy, this book offers a strong and distinctive perspective. If you would like to support Susan Burfield, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.